Good afternoon. You are tuned into June Afternoon New for Friday, the 20th of April, the year 2017. Today we'll be talking about the celebration of music, the Cole Porter that's going on this weekend. We'll talk with this weekend's performances of the Juno Symphony, Allison Gillam and Nancy Waterman. We'll talk about Saturday's annual weekend's Lens Cleanup. We'll talk about the Tongass Collaborative Stewardship Group, and Patricia Weary will be here with talking about Saturday's Berners Bay Cruise at Writer's Almanac, Vernon Museum, or today on a June afternoon. Well, the forecast for today, light rain. Forecast for tonight, a little bit more rain.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A judge Thursday reversed the decision of a Nebraska commission to deny liquor licenses to four stores which sell beer in White Clay. The Associated Press reports Judge Andrew Jacobson found the commission's decision unreasonable and exceeding its authority. The commission recently heard testimony about law enforcement issues and various problems associated with alcohol in the small border town. The town is said to sell millions of cans of beer a year. Advocates, including from the nearby Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, were hoping a ban would help address the problems. A Native American student group at a Montana university is working with the American Civil Liberties Union on a human rights complaint. Yellowstone Public Radio's Bree Ripley reports.
Alex Wright, legal director for ACLU Montana, says there's a culture of targeting Native American students on Montana State University Northern's campus. The most recent example occurred last week.
It was a statement by another student who essentially said that if Native Americans had been wiped out in the first place, then students would not be required to undergo Native American Studies courses.
An email written by the university's dean of students said that there was no immediate danger posed by the students' derogatory comments. So, the Sweetgrass Society got in touch with ACLU Montana. Wright says the Civil Liberties Organization is primarily investigating how the student group was denied First Amendment protections to free speech and free expression last fall by the Office of Student Activities.
Back in November of 2016, the university has what they call a painting program in which the student groups are allowed to paint particular steps in whatever way they see fit. The Sweetgrass Society chose to paint one of their steps with the No Doppel Dakota Access Pipeline hashtag.
The Office of Student Activities Interorganization Council decided to paint over the Sweetgrass Society steps.
And they considered the hashtag No Doppel to be vandalism. Essentially an accusation that the Sweetgrass Society had engaged in vandalism when it was simply exercising its First Amendment rights to speech and free expression.
The university spokesman, Jim Potter, told the state's largest newspaper that this most recent incident was a nothing thing. When contacted, Potter denied further requests for comment. I'm Bree Ripley.
Seven students from the Pine Ridge Reservation have been chosen to receive a top scholarship. Jim Kent has more.
Horatio Alger Jr. was a prolific 19th century author whose goal was to inspire his readers to work hard and persevere through adversity. The son of a poor Massachusetts pastor, Alger worked his way through Harvard and eventually wrote 128 books. Araceli Spotted Thunder is one of seven Red Cloud High School seniors to win the Alger Scholarship. She says she didn't know much about Alger before receiving the award, but coming from a home with an alcoholic mother and an abusive father, she's faced her share of adversity.
Whenever I started to coming into high school, it was hard for me to cope with it, because that's whenever I started to realize all this trauma that I went through. At the time, my mom was still an alcoholic, and so I was still dealing with her and her problem. I wanted to nurture her and be her parent, and to do that while in high school was really, really difficult. It pushed me to want to continue with school.
Being a parent to her mother helped Spotted Thunder realize that she didn't want to be like her mother, and that helped her to succeed. Spotted Thunder credits her grandmother for inspiring her to make it through the tough times, do well in school, and receive this scholarship. The Horatio Alger Association was founded in 1984. Since that time, it's awarded more than $125 million to 20,000 students across the country. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting science, technology, and engineering careers through a partnership with the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our first two guests are Heather Mitchell and Tom Loker, here to talk about the weekend's performance by the Juno Cabaret. Thanks for coming down today.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having us on the air again.
Thank you.
So you're showcasing the music of Cole Porter.
That's right, tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
At the New State Library Archives and Museum. We will be starting at 2 o'clock. Doors will open at 1:30. And we will give you a little bit of the life and career of Cole Porter.
Tell me a little bit about Cole Porter now.
All right. This is kind of fun for me because I've always loved Cole Porter. And he's from Indiana, and I went to college in Indiana. My son's name is Cole, so you know I kind of like Cole Porter. but he was raised in Indiana, but was a Yale grad and did come from money, and started his career in college and really became sort of the voice of the jazz age in many respects in terms of the way he wrote shows. He started to become immensely popular at the end of the 20s and had a long enduring career. And I don't think you could go through a standard show and not trip over at least, 3, 6, 8 Porter tunes.
I'd say that's true. Enormous contribution to the Great American Songbook. Hundreds and hundreds of titles, songs that have endured, that you still hear them, remade for jazz shows, used in TV ads, placed in movies. And some of these songs go back decades, but they have enduring properties that live on. And that's why we try and feature these Great American Songbook composers in these lecture concerts, is people will hear the music and think, I didn't know that guy wrote that, and that too, and that too, and so on. And we have some great singers featured in tomorrow's concert. Heather Mitchell, who's here in the studio with us today, is going to be our biographer and narrator, and she'll also sing a few of the numbers. Julie Causey is down from Haynes. She's going to sing a few numbers. Eve Dillingham is back with us for another lecture concert. So is LaToya Sharon. This is her fourth, 4 of 4. And we're going to be sad to lose LaToya. Her spouse is being transferred with the Coast Guard. So this is going to be her last lecture concert for a while. But we hope to have her back one day. Cole Mitchell is going to be featured for his first time in a lecture concert. He also happens to be Heather's son.
And, he earned it, though.
And each singer is going to do a few numbers. And then we're going to have a finale number where all the singers are together. So I didn't mention Vicki Van Fleet. She's also in this.
I was going to say, you got to mention Vicki.
Yeah, she's a great local singer. Fronts Fleet Street has for years. Has sung with Thunder Mountain Big Band. She performed in the Folk Festival last month. She's everywhere. I really love her singing, and she loves the Cole Porter Songbook, as does Heather and Julie and all the singers in tomorrow's show. And you're going to hear it in the way they sing these songs.
What about a song makes it a Cole Porter song?
I would say if there's something a little bit irreverent in the lyric, a little bit topical and irreverent in the lyric, and also alliterative things that play on puns. Wouldn't you tend to agree, Heather?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And a little saucy. He likes to be naughty. Mm-hmm. Not always overtly now. At the time, I think they were probably considered to be some pretty racy lyrics with the censors. Now it feels more quaint innuendo. But he definitely, if you feel a certain sense of sauciness, a little hedonism in the lyric, it's a Cole Porter song.
Right. And musically, a lot of these songs borrow elements from all the origins of the Great American Songbook. The mother songs, the way the chord changes move, 2-5-1, elements of vaudeville, endings that sort of give the singer a chance to ham it up a little bit at the very end and leave a lasting impression on the audience, which is essentially the essence of cabaret.
You said 251. What does that refer to?
Oh, in the...
You're going to have to explain that.
Okay. So in the scale, there are 8 notes or 12 notes if you count the black keys, too. And the 2 is the second note in the scale, and the 5 is the 5th, and the 1 is the 1st, also known as the tonic or the root. So in a C scale, 251 is going to be D, G, C. Yeah.
Did Cole Porter write music specifically for plays, and is that the only reason he was known?
No, I would say back in the 20s and even in the teens, a lot of these shows were vehicles for songs that they knew were going to be popular, and they needed a way to present them, promote mm-hmm. them, advertise them. And the New York stage was that place, either on Broadway, off Broadway, or way off. Some of these songs got their start. Later on, the sheet music itself would carry some advertising and make the song popular when American families started buying pianos for their homes. I would say that was more in the 30s. And then later on, of course, the movies, you know, and there are Cole Porter songs featured in lots of movies, and some of them will be in tomorrow's lecture concert. A song written in 1927, for example, that Julie Causey is going to sing was first used in a movie in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've done a number of showcases featuring notable composers.
Yeah.
What's next?
Oh, we're going to take a little break for the summer. The museum's going to be full of tourists.
Mm-hmm.
But in the fall, we hope to resume the series. And Laura Haywood, who's been a driving force behind getting this lecture concert series going with me, she is a great follower of biographies of composers. And we've talked with her about doing, so far we've featured Richard Rodgers, women composers last month for Women's History Month, Duke Ellington in February for Black History Month. We hope next year to feature Billy Strayhorn during February,
mm-hmm.
Jerome Kern, and mm-hmm. certainly Johnny Mercer.
Probably Johnny Mercer, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the Gershwins, I think, will be featured
definitely.
At some point.
They're on the list. Harry yeah. Warren, mm-hmm. Al Dubin.
We could stay busy for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the reasons we choose these composers, Jeff, is these are the songs people bring to the regular Juno Cabaret show, the open call show that we have every few weeks up at Rockwell Ballroom. The next one is June 25th. And we ask people to bring a Great American Songbook song. And the other song can be almost anything. And very often people bring a Cole Porter tune or a George Gershwin tune or a Duke Ellington tune, something like that. So once the singers and the company started to amass a list of songs they knew, it was easy to figure out which composers to feature at these lecture concerts, because we picked composers who'd written songs the singers already knew a few of and wanted to learn more.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it gives you an opportunity to sort of show the scope of, when you're talking about the enduring quality of these songs, but, you know, having these different venues and vehicles and opportunities and chances to use these songs, particularly with differing age groups. You know, I was laughing with my daughter when we were riding somewhere, and a song came on the radio, a popular music song, and it basically is a riff on Heart and Soul by Hoagy Carmichael, and I kind of laughed. I said, I wonder if that's enough of the theme for his estate to get royalties. But the point is that these songs stay relevant even in very strange and unexpected ways. You're like, I didn't know I knew that song. Oh, that's a songbook song, or oh, that's a song composed by somebody who did all these popular tunes. So it's kind of fun little discoveries. And as long as we keep working on these songs, particularly with young people, it's like building a foundation. It's just like studying Shakespeare gives you a literary foundation for lots of other literature, because so many things refer to it. Becomes referential.
One of our goals at Juno Cabaret is to get people exposed and interested in this great history that's uniquely American, the Great American Songbook, and the best way to preserve these, preservation through performance. That's sort of our mission, get people up on the stage, singing these songs, other people hearing them and saying, I like that, I want to sing that, I want to know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns into something more.
Yeah, Evan Mitchell and Tom Walker, thanks so much for coming down.
Tomorrow,
2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, 2 o'clock. Doors open at 1:30. The new museum. You can park downstairs out of the rain. The show should be concluded by 3:15, 3:30. So we hope to see everyone there. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you. We'll be right back.
It's 16 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about the Juno Symphony performance Saturday and Sunday.
Yes, we are, Jeff. We're excited. We've got a wonderful program lineup. We're doing Mozart's Jupiter Symphony, also his Violin Concerto No. 5 in A Major, the Turkish, and the Mozart Jupiter Symphony, as I said, and the Bernstein Chichester Psalms. And we have a very special guest, too, in the studio today. Our boy soprano, Alex Zuniga, is here.
Hello.
What's your favorite song?
My favorite song? In this, like, concerto?
Yes.
It would probably have to be the Chichester. It's a really well-arranged piece. I like it a lot. Yeah.
And I should have mentioned Troy Quinn,
music director
for the symphony.
Of course, Jeff.
How did you pick these particular pieces?
Well, it's a long process, as you know. I lock myself in my studio for about a week and don't talk or see anyone. And really, I go about it very carefully, picking things of balance, what the audience would like to hear, what we haven't performed before in Juno. Both of these pieces, the Chichester Psalms and the Mozart Jupiter Symphony, we have never done before. The symphony's never done it. So this will be a Juno premiere, which is great. I like to do things we haven't done, and perhaps these gems that the audience haven't heard, and also balancing what's challenging for the orchestra and the choir. And this has a lot of components in it. We've got 90 singers for the Juno Symphony Chorus joining us, and they're fabulous. We've got Alex, our boy soprano soloist, as well as our main orchestra. And it's a unique instrumentation for the Bernstein. It's strings, brass, and a bevy of percussion. So it's going to be loud and proud at times. It's a process, but we're looking forward to bringing it to Juno.
Alex, how long have you been singing?
I've been singing ever since I was about 8, around the middle of second grade. I was introduced to the Northwest Boy Choir by my music teacher, and ever since then I've just kind of been singing with them, and I am now in performing choir, in which we give the Lessons and Carols concert in Washington. We have 9 of those every year. Well, it depends. It's either 8 to 10. Like, it varies. And we go on a concert tour down in either the West Coast or the East Coast. It's like every other year. Every other, like, 2 years we have tours. And so I've been with the choir. This will be my 4th and final year with the boy choir. And, I've been singing with the boy choir for 5 years. 6 years. Sorry.
And he's a wonderful soloist. He's being very humble. I think everyone in Juno will want to come out and hear Alex's beautiful voice. You know, Bernstein set this piece particularly for boy soprano. It's actually in the music that it says under no circumstances could there be a female singer. So we're being very authentic here, and Alex is doing a wonderful job. You'll want to come hear the concert. That's this Saturday, April 29th, and Sunday, April 30th. Saturday concerts at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. at the JDHS. Tickets are still available, junosymphony.org, Hearthside, and at the door as well, Jeff.
Alex, what about music appeals to you?
Well, in my opinion, with music, it's all about the composition. Like, if you can have a very detailed, amazing, like, piece, but the composition is very generic, like, to me, that doesn't appeal. That's not very appealing. But when it's, like, very complex and nice, like modern, like, not modern, but jazz tunes, like, I enjoy jazz because of how, like, complex it could get. Like, I've been listening to a lot of Sean Martin recently, and his music is very detailed, and I like that because of how good composition and detailed, like, nuances and stuff all fit together, and basically a bunch of components working together is what makes music special for me.
What's your next step after you move away from the boys' choir?
After I move away from the boys' choir, I'll be going to Vocal Point, which is the next level after it. Like it's like teenagers in high school. We sing rock tunes. It's very cool. It's like we kind of do music from like the 70s and the 60s. Like we do Beatles classics and such. It's very fun.
All around musician.
Yeah. Maybe try to bring up next time. Very special Beatles concert.
That sounds good. Yeah. We'll do some Rolling Stones.
Tim, are you going to do your pre-concert talk at 7?
We will, Jeff. Yeah, there'll be a pre-concert lecture 7 p.m. on Saturday and 2 p.m. on Sunday. And come listen to that. It's a great opportunity for those of you who are not familiar with the pieces to hear a little bit of the behind-the-scenes analysis of it. And also just to give you a better idea of what to listen to. The Bernstein can be a little bit less melodic at times. It was written in 1965, of course, but some things can be very crunchy. There's a lot going on, too. It's very loud at points. There's the percussion and the strings and the brass. So I break that down and basically explain a little bit about what these composers' intentions were in writing these pieces. And it gives you a sort of a better understanding and I think an appreciation once you hear the piece live with that information. So that's 7 p.m. on Saturday, 2 p.m. on Sunday. Come out and support your Juno Symphony. It's going to be a blast.
I'm tempted to ask you for a little sample of your music, Alex.
Yes.
You'd like to perform just a little bit?
A little bit of my solo?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to stand up.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. We're getting a live performance.
Right.
Maybe the Otto Nye part, yeah.
Otto Nye,
bravo.
Sorry for the little voice track at the end.
Fantastic. It's performing with the Juno Symphony Saturday and Sunday. If you need more information on that, check junosymphony.org as a website. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, Jeff, I think it's going to be a wonderful concert, and this is going to be first performed in Juno, the Bernstein Chichester Psalms, and the Mozart Jupiter, a real symphonic tour de force. Come out and listen to wonderful music.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 28th of April, 2017. It's the birthday of the man who said half the people in Hollywood are dying to be discovered and the other half are afraid they will be. Lionel Barrymore, born in Philadelphia, 1878. You may have seen him in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, playing the part of the mean-spirited banker Henry Potter. He also played Ebenezer Scrooge on the radio every year in A Christmas Carol for many years. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "All I want is to be the Jane Austen of South Alabama." Harper Lee, born in Monroeville, Alabama, 1926, author of To Kill a Mockingbird, still required reading in many, many high schools. Not everyone was a fan of her book. Flannery O'Connor once said, "It's interesting that all the folks that are buying it don't know they're reading a child's book." It's the birthday of the playwright Robert Anderson, born New York City, 1917, author of Tea and Sympathy, about a relationship between a prep school boy and his housemaster's wife. The boy had gone sunbathing with a male professor, and the student faces accusations of homosexuality from other students, and the wife, a lonely woman, tries to shield him from harm by beginning a romantic relationship with him. The final line of the play, when the wife tells the young man, "Years from now, when you speak of this, and you will, be kind." Robert Anderson, the playwright, once said, "You can make a killing in the theater, but not a living." It's the birthday of the photographer Erich Salomon, born in Berlin, 1886, who bought one of the first cameras with a high-speed lens, which could take pictures in dim light, so he was able to take very casual, candid photographs of famous people at parties without their knowing it, in which they looked relaxed and unposed. And it's the birthday of the poet Carolyn Forshay, born in Detroit, 1950, editor of an anthology called Against Forgetting, 20th Century Poets of Witness. Here's a poem for today by Robert Lacks, Greeting to Spring, Not Without Trepidation. Over the back of the Florida basker, over the froth of the Firth of Forth, up from Tahiti and Madagascar, lo, the sun walks north. The first bright day makes sing the slackers while leaves explode like firecrackers. The duck flies forth to greet the spring, and sweetly municipal pigeons sing. Where the duck quacks, where the bird sings, we will speak of past things. Come out with your marbles, come out with your croup. The grass is as green as a Girl Scout troop. In the mall, the stone acoustics stand like a listening ear for the Goldman Band. At an outside table where the sun's bright glare is, we will speak of darkened Paris. Meanwhile, like attendants who hasten the hoofs of the ponies who trod in the shadow of roofs, the sun in his running will hasten the plan of plants and fishes, beast and man. We'll turn our eyes to the sogging ground and guess if the earth is cracked or round. Over the plans of the parties at strife, over the plains and the waiting north, over the average man and his wife, lo, the sun walks forth. Robert Lacks, from his collection Tertium Quid, published by Stride Publications, a poem, Greeting to Spring. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
So 29 minutes past the hour, neurotune to June afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about the June Community Wetlands Cleanup going up April 29th from 9 in the morning till 11 in the morning. In the studio, we have Allison Gillum and Nancy Moteman here from the June Community, the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. Excuse me. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
So tell me about the cleanup. How does that work?
Well, the cleanup, so the Southeast Alaska Land Trust has been doing this cleanup for many years, and this year is no different. We're doing it again. This area, the wetlands in general, are a special area for the whole community, but especially so for the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. We've been working to protect lands abutting the refuge since about 2002, and we now protect roughly 13 properties totaling about 50 acres abutting the refuge. So it's an important area for our community, for our organization, and definitely for our community as well. So that's why we focus on the Sunny Point area, which is where this cleanup is going to be focused out of. We're going to be meeting at the Ruse House at the 7083 Hendrickson Road, starting at 9 a.m. And there are going to be kids activities put on by Discovery Southeast from 9 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. And we're going to be cleaning up from 9 to 11 out in the wetlands. So definitely make sure you bring rubber boots, gloves, friends. And then after the cleanup, there's going to be a party that the Alaska Brewery is going to be putting on from 1 to 5 p.m. So it's going to be a good time.
You've done this a number of years. Nancy, what's the weirdest thing you found out there?
Well, this year we'll be focusing on a dock. It's primarily a big block of styrofoam coated with a sheen of stucco. And people like Bruce Denton and others have blasted it apart. The ravens have gotten into the styrofoam. So our project this year includes picking up little bits of styrofoam. We're hoping that somebody will bring a styrofoam magnet so that it makes it much easier than with pinched fingers. That project will include, we're glad to say, a helicopter hoist by North
North Star Trekking.
Yeah. Scheduled sometime next week. So we're hoping to consolidate some of the larger things, tires on rims and barrels, 55-gallon barrels with unknown content, and pieces of that big styrofoam dock in order to hoist those out efficiently. We also understand that there will be a green team from Alaska Airlines helping us. We'll be working right off the end of the airport runway there for quite a few things. There was a really high tide last night, a 19.6, so we hope that our job is easier because there will be a windrow of material at that high tide line. So bring your, as Allison says, your rubber boots, your rubber gloves, and prepared to meet a lot of friends and pick up some debris. We'll be hosting trucks at the end of Branta Road at Jim and Mary Lou King's house to load it into. And Waste Management does us the great favor of allowing us to bring that material into the landfill for free. On Saturday afternoon, there will be people, friends of recycling, sorting the recyclables. So we'll have both yellow bags and green bags, aluminum and primarily those plastic water and juice bottles can be recycled. We encourage glass to go in with the trash. It's too dangerous to resort. So lots of activity on Saturday. I'm a member also of the board of Litter Free, and I think the success of this Saturday cleanup tomorrow on a sunny Saturday morning, it's supposed to be sunny, will depend on you to make sure that weather report comes true. The success is the cooperative effort of this community with Litter Free, Seal Trust, the Coastal Code Program of the Alaska Brewing Company, and Girl Scouts and Green Team from Alaska Airlines. That's what makes this day work, is all of that coordinated effort.
As long as you're here, Allison, you want to tell us a little bit about the Southeast Alaska Land Trust?
Yeah, sure. The Land Trust was formed back in 1995, so we're well over 20 years old now. We are a private nonprofit conservation organization, and we work all around Southeast Alaska, but our primary goal is to either purchase land and own it outright to protect it, or to protect land using different legal means, such as conservation easement, which is basically a legal document that protects land. So we, over our 20 plus years, we've now protected about 3,500 acres throughout the region, and several of those are surrounding the refuge here in Juneau. We are thrilled, as always, to be putting on this event to help clean up this resource for our entire community.
It's too bad there's so much trash out there, because it's a beautiful area. You see people just tossing things away.
Right. Yeah, the tidal action can bring in a lot of trash from the ocean, and it is a important bird area. It's been designated as that, and also really important area for salmon, both for spawning and rearing for salmon. So it's definitely an important area, both for us scenically, but also for natural habitat reasons.
I've been talking to Nancy Waterman and Allison Gillum from organizations that are working together to clean up the wetlands. You want to give us the details again, please, Allison?
Yeah, so again, it's tomorrow, Saturday, from starting at 9 a.m., running to about 11 a.m. We'll see. Volunteers tend to be really enthusiastic every year.
I'm going to arrive early. I'm going to get started early. The low tide is right at 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. and it's I think it's about a minus 3.8 or toward minus 4. So it's one of those things where we can get started early if you want to.
Every year, about 3,000 pounds of trash are picked up out of the wetlands. So, again, the volunteers are enthusiastic, and they do an incredible job. We'll see what happens this year.
All right. Thanks for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I think every day is a good day to do a random act of kindness and pick up a piece of garbage. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. These clear spring notes belong to a bird celebrated for its singing, the song sparrow. Without that melodious song, this skulking bird could be overlooked, since it stays low, often hiding in brambles or piles of brush, and it nests on or near the ground. When the song sparrow pops up on top of a tangle of branches to offer its cheery song, you'll see a dull brown bird. At first glance, this sparrow seems a perfect example of an LBB, or little brown bird, but look closely. Gray stripes adorn its rusty brown head. The pale breast is streaked heavily with brown, often coalescing into a central spot. Song sparrows frequently twitch their tails up and down, even when flying low across a clearing. This widespread songster is found throughout the United States and into southern Canada. If you'd like to bring them into your garden, plant thick, low vegetation or create a brush pile. Then this lovely sound may fill your day, since the song sparrow utters its serenade morning, noon, and evening. You can send this show to a friend. Begin at birdnote.org. Or share it on Facebook. Search for Bird Note, all one word. And thanks. I'm Mary McCann.
Join sustainable farming celebrity Joel Salatin alongside community members for a workshop at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center on Wednesday, May 3rd from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The Alaska Design Forum will host this creative and practical policy brainstorm, offering can-do options for locals who want to transition to a more earth-friendly, diversified, decentralized, community-empowered culture by answering the question, what can I do? Get more details and tickets at alaskadesignforum.org. This message brought to you by the Alaska Design Forum.
Recapture those folk festival highs on the dance floor at the last barn dance of spring. This Saturday, April 29th, 7:30 to 11 p.m., St. Anne's Parish Hall, 5th Street, downtown. Susie Kendig will teach and call contra dances to lively French-Canadian tunes by Greg McLaughlin and Leif and Liz Say of the Taku Gales. You don't need experience or a partner. Discounts for age 25 and under, free for JVs and AmeriCorps, sponsored by Juno Folk Dancers with help from KRNN. Barn dance, Saturday night.
39 minutes past the hour, and you're attuned to KTUO News in Juneau and KRNN FM in Juneau. Our next guest is here to talk about 100 Voices, 100 Days, 100 Voices. They had a call for submissions earlier, and Sarah Hamden is here to tell us about it. Thanks for coming in, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jeff, and thanks so much. I love this radio station. You do so much good work here, and it's really a pleasure to get to be on the air.
Tell me about the It's not a competition, it's just a collection of collaborative pieces.
Right. So 100 Days, 100 Voices is a community art showcase. And it's happening tomorrow for one day only. It's a pop-up show, and it's happening at the Canvas right in downtown Juneau. And it will be open from noon to 8 tomorrow, and I'll tell you there's a few different events going on. But first off, I want people to know it's this one-day event happening tomorrow. Come out and come by the Canvas and check it out.
What gave you the inspiration? Can you give us an overview of the show?
Yeah, for sure. So tomorrow marks the 100th day of President Trump's time in office. And I was really struck, as I think many people were, by just what a difficult time this is for us nationally. I think it doesn't matter what your personal politics are and where you sort of stand on the political spectrum. I think this has been, the campaign was so divisive, the election and the following months have just really been a challenging time for families and for communities. And I'm really interested in the role that artwork plays in allowing people to express what they're experiencing and also heal some of the divide, share our opinions and listen more deeply to one another. So I found myself getting a lot of peace and clarity from my own art practice over the past few months. And I started thinking, well, wouldn't it Wouldn't it be neat if there was an opportunity for other people in Southeast Alaska to do that as well? I bet that other people would also benefit from an opportunity to do that. And so I decided to pull together this show. So what I did was I put out a call for submissions across Southeast Alaska. I did that on Facebook. I did that through email to friends and friends of friends. I put up posters all over Juneau through the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council's postering service. And then I also, Mary Catherine Martin and the staff at the Capital City Weekly did a great article that was sent out in the Capital City Weekly to towns across Southeast Alaska. So I asked people all over the region. Anyone who wanted to participate in the show was welcome. They could make works that were performances, live performance, or visual art, or fabric art, or sculpture, anything that we could display within this sort of one-day time frame. And I asked them to make pieces that were framed around one or more of these three pretty straightforward questions. So first question is, how has this time been for you? You know, what are you experiencing? And the second question is, what is most on your mind right now? What is on your chest that you want to get off? And then the third question is, what role does artwork play for you and or for your community in times like this? And so 20 artists from around Southeast Alaska have submitted pieces, and they're going to be up for one day only at the canvas.
Could you describe some of the pieces, please?
Sure. Well, I can tell you first off that I have not seen all of them yet. So there are about 16 visual art pieces, visual and digital art pieces. There are two documentary films that are shorts. There is an audio piece that is described as a sound painting. There is photography. There is watercolor work. There is etching. And there's a number of other visual art pieces that will be displayed in the gallery at the canvas. And then there also are a couple of live performances. So at 5:30 tomorrow, we'll have live performances. And we have a musician performing, a storyteller, and then a person reading a piece of poetry as well.
What's the general feeling you get from looking at some of the pieces?
I think that, I mean, I can say that the sense that I've gotten so far from people who have decided to submit work, that the majority of them come from a place of being frustrated and having levels of sorrow or anger about the state of our current politics. And I think in some ways that's pretty reflective of my own personal network in Juneau as well as in Southeast Alaska. You know, friends and friends of friends are more likely to submit work to a show than a stranger, perhaps. But I also think that it says something about the level of sort of urgency and pain that is felt in a lot of the nation currently. So there are a lot of emotions that people are eager to share through their artwork, and I think artwork is a really positive way to do that. One other thing that's happening tomorrow, so the gallery showcase is going to be available from noon to 8. At 5:30, there's live performances, and also all through the afternoon, we're going to be doing live mural making. So along with my friend Kirsha Huskandis, we are making a big canvas that is a timeline of the 100 days, and we're going to create sort of a key code of paint colors associated with emotions that people have experienced over this time. And we're going to ask people to fill in blocks of color along the timeline that represent how their experience has been. And we're basically going to create a visual emotional graph of Juno's response.
It seems like a little bit like guerrilla art.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you expect people to walk away from the exhibit feeling?
Well, I really hope that people will feel that their voices are welcome. This is an apolitical, politically themed event. So I really hope that people with viewpoints all across the political spectrum will come. We'll take a look at the pieces. Maybe we'll sit in dialogue with friends or family members about this 100 days and reflect on this time. And then I also certainly hope that people will participate and help us make this mural, and also think about the role that arts, but also just the act of creativity plays in their lives, and especially in challenging times in their lives.
How does this affect you?
This has been really great for me. I think as somebody who personally had a lot of difficult emotions around the election and over these last couple months, I found myself drawn to artwork as a place of healing. I think I said earlier, you know, peace and a little bit of clarity. And it's felt really inspiring to me to be able to channel that energy into something that feels really positive for my community. And so we have 20 artists performing in the, or participating in the show, not only from Juneau, but from Sitka and Gustavus and Angoon and Haines. And so to see people coming together in that way is really exciting.
Sounds pretty emotionally charged.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's reflective of the time. And so my hope is that people can use that outlet and then take those opportunities for a little bit of catharsis.
I'm talking with Sarah Campin about the 100 Days, 100 Voices. We had a call for submissions they would do on the 20th of April. But the show is tomorrow from... Give us the details again, please.
Yeah, the show is tomorrow at the Canvas in downtown Juneau. It will be open from noon to 8 to view digital art and visual art. From noon to 5, we'll have the live mural making open. And then at 5:30, there will be live performances.
All right, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I think that's it. Thanks so much, Jeff. Thank you.
Support for this station comes from the Breeze Inn Lemon Creek, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily with a selection of baked goods, hot sandwiches, burritos, soups, and more. Menus online at breezeinn.com.
The Alaska State Improv Festival returns to McPheeters Hall in the Hangar Ballroom, April 27 to May 1, with groups from across the continent featuring Liss and Sams from San Francisco. Shows begin at 6:30 each night. The Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, McPheeters Hall and the Hangar Ballroom. Visit asifest.com for more details. Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, asifest.com.
It's about 6 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our last guest for today is Patricia Weary with the Juno Audubon Society, here to talk about Saturday's Burner's Bay Cruise. Thanks for coming by, Patricia.
Thank you.
You want to give us a little rundown of what the Juno Audubon Society is doing these days?
Well, we're doing two cruises to Burner's Bay as money raisers. These are going to be on Allen Marine catamarans, which if anybody's gone on those, makes a great cruise. It's two stories. You practically got 360 view all the way around. You can go out on deck on the second one, or you can stay inside. And I think what it's doing outside right now, raining, is predicted not to do that tomorrow. We're supposed to have sun and not a very big chance of rain. So I think we've hit it on a good Saturday in a good window. They're going to go at 8:30 from Statler's Harbor. That's below DeHart's. Be loading up. They'll be selling tickets right there at the top of the ramp if you come a little earlier. You can also get them at Harside Bookstore. And they'll go out to Burner's Bay and back. We have a university person doing the talking about marine mammals. We have Lori Craig, who is ranger extraordinaire from out at the glacier. We have a gal called Amy, who is a whiz birder. She's a young woman who just picks up so quickly birds and learning more about birds. And we also have a professional from the fisheries. So we've got some very interesting expert people that'll be there to answer questions and give little short talks. And on the way back, we have a lot of giveaway, little gifts for people from Burner's Bay back to Juneau. Take a lunch. There's hot coffee and chocolate aboard the catamaran, and I just think it'll be a lot of fun. Lots of people that can help you with identification. Oh, and you might see some orcas or some humpbacks, too.
What's so special about Burner's Bay?
Fish running up and down that river. It's a major fishing area, so you get all different kinds of fish going in, and it ends up setting the table for a lot of different creatures, for the whales, for the birds. The table's set. And creatures are there to eat them, all different kinds of fish.
What does it cost?
We have three different prices. Adults are $70. Students, this includes the UAS folks, are $40. Kids under 12 or 25, those kids have to be accompanied by adult.
Over the years, what has been some of the most amazing things you've seen?
Oh, I think probably the whales. I really enjoy when we see whales, and some of the killer whales on the trips that I've gone happened to be very close, and I like seeing that. I would like to go and see more humpbacks doing different things, but I haven't had the chance to make it on a tour that does that.
And what time should people arrive there?
Well, they're going to board. They're boarding, I think, at 8:30, so they want to show up at 8 o'clock. They line up there at the top of the ramp. People will be selling tickets at the top of the ramp. And then they'll take 15 minutes or more to load, and then away they go. I think the departure time is 8:30, so you definitely want to be there at 8 if you're going to buy those tickets.
Patricia Weary, anything you'd like to add to mind if we're going to ask?
Going to be a good day. Go and have a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids' smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
You have been listening to June afternoon. Next Monday on a June afternoon, we'll hear from Larry Zaka, Wednesday's Daughters of America speaker. We'll learn about life in Alaska. We're going to preview First Friday at the Canvas. JPD Chief Bryce Johnson will be here with updates on police activities. And we'll get details about the upcoming Maritime Festival and the Port to Starboard Dinner. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout, Music and More on Monday's June afternoon.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also...